Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
What did you make of the performance?
I think in the first half, from 0 to 10, minus 1.
Not bad.
That bad. That bad, really. We were bad.
Hopefully our performance won't be a minus one. A wild and crazy Premier League weekend. Tons of Mourinho audio for you. Messi injured. All this coming up. European Football Weekly.
I'm going to wait till the beat go in.
That's a lovely turn from Clinton and Jai. Lamella in the middle. It's Eric Lamella. And it's 4-1. What a chastening afternoon for Manchester City. They'll point to some big decisions and some bad luck. But don't take anything away from Tottenham, who've been irrepressible in this second half.
Eric Lamella, the performance that I've been waiting for 3 years, finally comes.
So you actually look like you called this one.
Yeah, I called
it. Like he's going to be a player.
Yep.
Wow. You're reaching for... reaching.
I'm Dan Riccio. That is Thomas Michalakos.
Reaching.
I am the world's biggest Eric Lamella fan. At Dan Riccio 590.
I can vouch for that one.
He is at UnfitRef. You can use the hashtag EFW590 to follow along with the show and send in questions, comments, anything you shall please with the show. So we'll start there. We have so much to get to. We're going to talk to Andres Cordero in the second segment of the show. Lionel Messi is hurt for 2 months. And there's so much more to talk about around La Liga and Serie A as well. Tottenham, though, 4-1 win over Manchester City, the now not Premier League leading Manchester City. And Eric Lamella was given a standing ovation for his performance in this one. Scored the fourth goal, the cherry on top, had an assist earlier as well. Given some of his performances in other games against Manchester City, it was a pleasant surprise to see him actually play well. Like, he's had some horrid, horrid performances, especially against Manchester City in recent memory.
Yeah, but just overall, like, it's deserved this performance. Yeah. Give him all the praise. Let him take it. He's had 3 long years of hard football, tough times at White Hart Lane. And just give him this one, okay? So let's just stay there. Stop reaching Riccio over there with making him like the messiah of football.
Maybe Pochettino has finally got him to buy in defensively, which has long been Eric Lamella's biggest problem, is that he was kind of a talented player without a whole lot of tactical nuance about him. Didn't show that on Saturday, and he helped out in the big 4-1 win. Harry Kane also gets a goal, his first of the year. That was kind of a theme of this Premier League weekend, a lot of players getting their first goals. But the story is Manchester City. Let's not beat around the bush here. The story is Manchester City and them losing for the second straight week, 3 straight losses overall, and this is a massive loss because they lose top of the table. And it's like there's just injuries on injuries on injuries for this team, Thomas.
And Champions League's coming up as well.
Yeah.
And one word best describes their performance: spineless.
Yeah.
Absolutely and, well, spineless.
And look at the team sheet, and you'll figure out why they were so spineless,
why, as you say.
I mean, there was no Elequi Mangala, who is finally playing well for Manchester City. There was no Vinny Kompany, still injured. Yaya Toure had to go off injured.
David
Joe
Silva.
Hart was out as well in this game. And David Silva was also not playing in this one. That is literally the entire middle of the team.
But isn't this, doesn't Pellegrini always say, we have 2 players at every position? So they shouldn't have these problems if their team is so deep and the money they've spent. They shouldn't have these problems.
Yeah, and well, you know, it's tough to throw in Nicolas Otamendi into his first game, and it's like, all right, here you go. Throw you to the Wolves.
Look, when I see
mean, I know you're a great defender, but like he's never really played with Martin De Michelis unless they've played for the Argentine national team together. De Michelis we know any defender that plays with Demichelis has to defend to the end of the world to make up for all of his mistakes and his lack of pace as well.
And you got to look at Raheem Sterling, still new on the team. Kevin De Bruyne still new on the team.
Well,
so.
De Bruyne, I mean, he scored the first goal. And what do we always think when Tottenham, they seem to always go down early against big teams. And it's like, oh, well, this is going to be 4-0 probably, or 5-1, something like that. Aguero's going to end up scoring a hat-trick or at least a couple of goals like he always does against the Tottenham Hotspurs. And what did City do? And you can really look right at De Bruyne, and he gave the game right back to Tottenham. And he passed it basically right to Eric Dier, who scored a beautiful goal. Give him credit for that. But it was that turnover that really turned the game on its head.
Yeah, and you look at Manchester City and go, okay, you know, they lost a game 2-1. It was very difficult. Like, no one expected them to lose to West Ham 2-1.
No.
And now they go out and lose like this. When they first scored the when Manchester City first scored the goal, we were thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
It's over.
It's over.
Gone.
See you later.
Another horrible defeat. But was this one more powerful, or was the 5-2 over Chelsea more powerful? Because that was those are the only two games that they've actually won against big sides.
I don't know. This is probably, like, let's be honest, this is probably Tottenham's
shining moment.
Best result of the year.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're not. They're Tottenham. I mean, we want to like them and we want to see them do better, but they never do. So, I mean, let's just live with the fact that they're probably going to end up in fifth place like they are right now, although they are only 4 points off top of the table. Interesting note here for us in Toronto, and that is George Evans got into the game, or no, he didn't get into the game. Patrick Roberts got into
He was on the bench.
George Evans was on the bench for Manchester City.
And who is George Evans?
He's the guy who scored that beauty wonder goal here at BMO Field over the summer to win for Manchester City over the TFC. So that was interesting. And coming up midweek, Manchester City is going to play Borussia Mönchengladbach. Thomas, who's won 2 on the spin since their manager resigned.
After losing 4 on the hop.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is, that should be easy pickings for Manchester City. And then they get Newcastle at home next weekend. So it should be more easy pickings.
Are they at Borussia Park?
I don't know.
For that one? No.
I'm not sure. Either way, they should win.
They should win.
They kind of need to win considering they lost their first game already. All right. Let's get to the good stuff now. And we'll go to St. James Park.
Juicy.
Where Jose Mourinho has never won a Premier League match in his career. 3 draws now and 3 losses on his CV at St. James Park. This was, for the most part, a dreadful Chelsea performance until Willian and Ramirez came on the field. And you heard Mourinho off the top of the show talk about how poor a performance it was, gave them a -1 out of 10. Other great quotes that have come out of previous matches for Jose Mourinho at Chelsea or at St. James Park. My team was 11 mistakes. I made 11 mistakes. It started a segment here on the show called 11 Mistakes. I don't know what it is about St. James Park, but Mourinho hates it there.
It's the same thing it is when Wenger plays Mourinho. We don't know what it is, but Wenger can't beat Mourinho and Mourinho can't win at St. James Park. It's one of those things. It's the aura.
It's the aura of football. All right, let's get into some of the Mourinho
audio. Yes, please. Got to hear it.
And he did call out his players, but he also made note of Newcastle's performance and just kind of compared it to how poor they've been in every other game this season. Let's hear it.
You know, I think maybe one of the reasons why Newcastle over the years doesn't get good positions, I think is because of this mentality. It's because they choose some matches to sweat blood, and in other matches they don't. This is an attitude typical of a team that wins nothing. They follow a line that many pundits, they gave it straight away. You have to fight, you have to kick, you have to tackle, you have to run. So they were exactly that. And they fought for a point. And I think they deserve the point the way they fought.
So many things came out of that. But most importantly, He was saying choose and not shoes. Choose.
Choose.
Not shoes.
Yeah, he's not going to throw a shoe.
No.
It's choosing. I gotcha. I was lost on that. You know me with accents. I don't know.
It's funny that he just absolutely obliterates Newcastle for this type of performance. Certainly fed up that he never seems to get a win there. But at the same time, like, your players played like crap. And he mentioned that too. But, it's like, it's a little bit of a give and take here. If your players are up to the task,
doesn't matter what the other team.
You beat Newcastle 10 times out of 10.
Doesn't matter what, if your players are up for it, doesn't matter what the other team's doing.
Yeah.
You win the game. It's in your hands as just as much as it's in theirs.
Especially the talent differential here, right?
Of course. You got to think, though, Mourinho was that kid in the playground who lost and would take his ball and go home.
Yeah.
He was that kid. He just sour grapes.
Let's hear from Steve McLaren and what he thought on this great Newcastle performance.
You said the line in the sand. Is this now the line that draws the bar? Don't dip below this now.
That's it. We said that's the standard. And this team's got a growing belief. Oh, it'd been brilliant to win the game. The belief would have shot through the roof. We've not. They're disappointed, actually, in there, which is good. But I just said, come on. When we have that attitude, show that character, and have the courage to play football, which they did against a very, very good team. Come on, we've got to go on from this.
Well, yeah, that was nice draw, but you still don't have a Premier League win this year.
You know what? I'm starting to side with Mourinho after hearing that one. Okay, this is a team that has a mentality of losing. Because you draw it. It's great. It's against Chelsea, but you're up 2-0.
Yeah.
You're at home.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be happy about this.
No.
You should be upset. You shouldn't be just like, oh, nice, this is the mentality we need. No, it's not the mentality you need, and Jose Mourinho's right.
Taking positives of something that maybe is a bit of a negative in that you gave up a 2-goal lead.
It's a total negative.
And you look at Newcastle's recent games, they lost to Sheffield Wednesday in the Capital One Cup midweek. They lost to Watford last week.
At home, they lost to Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah, they lost to Watford last weekend. They lost to West Ham the weekend prior. They lost to Arsenal. Their last win came against Northampton in Capital One Cup play.
To sweat blood.
Second round Capital
and
One Cup
play.
This
is the team that had the third highest net spend in the Premier League this season. Granted, Jorginho Wijnaldum looked better in this game. I think this was the first time they led in a game since they led in week one against Southampton for a brief time. I will say, Alexander Mitrovic finally showed up for a game. He was great. And not only that, like, he was great, but the way he was engaging with the crowd and getting the Toon Army up and really pumping them up, I mean, it was a good sign for one of their big signings.
You need that player-fan interaction, because if I was a Newcastle season ticket holder,
yeah,
it'd be the worst thing ever. Think about how much misery you've seen in that stadium. So when a player comes up to you and tries to high-five you and starts getting you, oh, yeah, it's nice, but you're still losers.
Yeah, and they still miss Alan Pardew there. Worst thing that they've ever done was sell Alan Pardew
for £2 million
to Crystal Palace. All right, Jose Mourinho, I want to get this because we've been waiting for him to really rip into some of his players, and he's kind of done it, but a bit subdued. Let's hear what he had to say on some of the performances from his Chelsea side.
This first half, I can rate in one of the worst performances, yes. I put down to awful individual performances. When you have so many bad individual performances, it's impossible for a team to be a team. The reason why we had so many individual bad performances is difficult to answer. But is the reason why the team in the first half was not there? Is because individually we were not there.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Individual performances. Mm-hmm. What have we said all season long about Cesc Fabregas and Branislav Ivanovic?
You've been awful.
Awful. So those are the individual performances, but yet week in and week out, you play those players.
And you know what? The man, Kurt Zouma, who claims Diego Costa is a cheater, as we showed on the show last week. Kurt Zouma, you look at the first goal, what the hell is he doing? Like, he just lets the ball go right to Ayoze Perez. What are you doing? And you can kind of blame Ivanovic that he wasn't there to support, but he's expecting Zuma to get that ball. It's his ball.
Well, there.
I mean, and you look at Fabregas on the second goal, just not covering Wijnaldum on the corner kick. Finally, in the second half, they bring in Ramirez and Willian, and everything changes. They finally get some energy into that midfield. Fabregas had the thing on his head, you know, the wrap thing.
I would say what it looks like, but I don't want to.
Okay. But there was just so many bad performances all across the board for Chelsea, and I'm just waiting for the day where, and maybe it's next week, where Chelsea and Jose Mourinho say, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm putting in Ramen Baba. I'm putting in Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I'm putting in Kennedy. I'm putting in anybody who is not the guys that have been out there every single week so far. And even Eden Hazard has been really bad this year.
Ramen Baba wasn't even on the bench.
I know. I don't know what happened.
Why would they buy him if they're not going to play him?
And John Terry didn't play either. Again, so it's...
And Falcao did nothing.
Very interesting times with Chelsea right now. And they are... If you thought that they were coming out of it last week, well, you kind of thought wrong. And right now they're 15th in the table. Two wins, two losses.
And they're...
Three losses and two draws.
What's worse? Because I look at Chelsea and Juve and they're neck and neck with each other. Like, Chelsea's right behind them as to being the worst this season.
Yeah.
What do you think? Who's worse? Juve or Chelsea? Come on, Dan.
They're both really bad. They're both doing
just
very,
leave
very,
me hanging. I'm just trying to
very,
tell you.
Very, very poorly in winning or in defending their championships this year. At least Juve has, a run of four straight championships. But, you know, like Chelsea, they lost three games all of last year. Now they've already lost three. I mean, it's borderline ridiculous. They are the worst defense in the Premier League. When have you been ever able to say that about a Jose Mourinho team?
And the crazy thing is this was a chance for them to gain points, like get up in the table. I mean, Manchester City losing 2 weeks in a row. There it is right there. They could have easily gotten 6 points out of that and they only have gotten three.
Yeah. And, like the Premier League table right now, it's pretty bunched up. 5 points separates the top and
it's open again.
So it's kind of interesting right now, but Chelsea hasn't been able to capitalize on that. I mentioned that Chelsea is the worst defense in the Premier League. I'm wrong. Because Sunderland got the bleep kicked out of them this weekend at Old Trafford. 3-0 they lose to Manchester United. And guess who's top of the table, Thomas? It's not Liverpool, that's for sure.
Those pesky Red Devils.
It's not Manchester City. It's not Arsenal. It's not Chelsea.
We get it. We know who it is, Dan.
It is. Louis van Gaal's army. That's right, right? Yeah.
I'll never get sick of hearing that.
No, it was so great. Manchester United with a 3-0 victory over Sunderland. Memphis Depay scoring, Wayne Rooney scoring, and Juan Mata with the cherry on top.
I have to say, that was a really good impression.
What?
Your Louis van Gaal.
Oh, sorry.
That was really good.
I've heard it.
Louis van Gaal's army!
See, like it was perfect.
Well, I keep saying Hall, and apparently he wants it to be said Gaul. So.
Spot on, Dan. Spot on.
We've never been told what was right, but I guess if he is saying Gaul, then it is Gaul. Let's hear it one more time.
Louis van Gaal's army.
It's Gaul.
Top of the table. They're Gaul. Top of the table. They are top of the table. Memphis and Rooney scoring their first goals of the year.
In the league.
Contenders, pretenders. They're going to be fighting all year for the title. What do you think about Manchester United?
They're playing pretty good, Dan.
That's a terrible answer.
That's the same answer I'm giving you when I'm trying to bring you in with Juve.
Okay, and Sunderland's
really pretty good, Dan.
Sunderland's really bad. I'm just assuming Dick Advocaat at some point says, I'm done with this.
He's already said it. He's already said that if it's best for the team, I'll walk away, which most managers say. But when you hear it, when you hear him say it, like in the post-match thing, he really believed. It almost seemed like he wants to walk away.
I think he's fed up, and I think there's nobody out there that really wants this job. Somebody will take
he
it.
He is.
But there's a lot of talk, and it comes from the Secret Footballer, a lot of it, that there is a serious drinking culture at Sunderland, and it's not going away, and I'm not surprised. So
was Lee Cattermole.
Have fun, Jermaine Defoe, who apparently doesn't drink. At least that's what he told
us. Is Lee Cattermole the captain still? I think Lee Catterman is still the captain. So, I mean, it goes without question there. You got a you got a hatchet man as your captain.
Just brutal.
And a drinking culture that probably rivals Arsenal's drinking culture with Tony Adams back in the day, which Wenger shut down as soon as he got in, right?
Yeah.
But you got to think Advocaat is just begging for a buyout right now. Please buy me out.
He doesn't want to stick around. Dan Riccio, Thomas Cucholacos, a couple more minutes here. Then we'll get to Dre Cordero and talk about Messi's injury for Barcelona. Liverpool, you get a win and Brendan Rodgers saves his job.
For now.
Kind of like Daniel Sturridge has been saving Brendan Rodgers' ass for so many years.
Well, when he's healthy, he is.
Yeah.
It's not that
when
many.
When he's not, it's just, you know, Liverpool's terrible.
Keeps the pressure.
He's really the perfect striker for them. I mean, I'm watching the game, I'm watching the highlights, and it's like, okay, well, Ings, Sturridge, and Coutinho, they work so well together. Where do you fit Benteke when he's back from his injury?
And there you go.
Because Ings
conundrum.
Ings seems to fit Rodgers' system better than Benteke right now.
Ings, they've already have chance for him. The cop has really taken into him because you've seen the work ethic with some Liverpool players hasn't been there. Emre Can has been had work ethic. Danny Ings, when he's on the field, lots of work. And that's what the cop Liverpool is, a very hardworking, hands dirty type of city. And they love that type of grittiness in their players. They always have. And when you see that, now you're going to have that problem with Benteke, who you spent all this money on.
And we kind of called it.
But the fans want the player that you've spent very minimal on the pitch. And they look better, honestly, with Ings in there.
I think a lot of it has to do with Sturridge. And the question is, how long can he stay healthy? But we don't have time to talk about it more. We'll do so in further weeks right here on European Football Weekly. Arsenal's 5-2 win over Leicester. Jamie Vardy is unbelievable. And he should be England's top striker right now.
Are we going into the same vortex when Jay Bothroyd was supposed to be England's striker?
Yeah. Or Charlie Austin or maybe Danny Ings.
Dean Ashton. We can go even further down the down the line. So many.
Harry Kane.
Let's not kill this player too soon.
Okay.
English media. But yeah, I think he has 5 goals. Riyad Mahrez has 5 goals. Top of the table in the EPL scoring charts.
And Alexis Sanchez now has 3 after a hat trick this weekend, finally getting off the hop like so many others did this weekend. Theo Walcott looks like he's taken Olivier Giroud's job. And you know what? Team looks better with him there.
Yeah. I mean, they're a pacey team, right? And who's better to have in that type of style than
Theo Walcott?
I love Giroud. He has great attributes, but he doesn't really fit that Wenger style.
Interesting times at Arsenal. They're right on track to finish where they always finish, 4th in the table. Woo! European Football Weekly, Dan Riccio, Thomas Cucholacos. We'll come back. We'll talk some La Liga. We'll talk some Serie A with Dre Cordero. That's coming up next, European Football Weekly.
Bush party tonight.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Rakitic continues his run. The back heel for Sergi Roberto. One time cross for Luis Suarez. Oh. Luis Suarez with the opener. 25 minutes in, it's Luisito.
What a header, what a ball. And the header is as much punch to it as a bucket full of knuckles.
Things were going good for Barcelona in terms of the result. But what happened previously to Suarez scoring a couple of goals, possibly more detrimental to the team than would have been losing this game had Lionel Messi got hurt, Thomas.
How quick did we hear the news that he was gone for 7 to 8 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, how quick?
And you know what? This is European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. You heard Andres Cordero on the call there with Ray Hudson, and Dre is going to join us in just a couple of seconds. He from BeIN Sport. But this is one thing I also kind of find fascinating about Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, you rolled that R.
They never get hurt. Like, they are
Well, Messi more so than Ronaldo lately, though. Like last two years ago, he was hurt.
Well, the last time he missed a game because of injury was, according to Barcelona's official website, was 2013-14.
Yeah.
November 10th, 2013. Like, that's a long time. That's
still a long time.
Still 2 years.
In modern football, right?
Yeah.
And Ronaldo probably even longer.
You look at other guys like Aguero, Rooney.
Sturridge.
Even guys in Serie A that continuously get hurt. Sturridge. You know, as great as he was this week, and we talked about it already, but there's no way that he's going to stay healthy through the whole year. You can't depend on that if you're Liverpool.
No, but guys like Messi and Ronaldo,
they almost never get hurt, and it's crazy. Not only because they've both logged a lot of mileage on those legs, now that they're into the primes of their career,
and Messi, they go. Sorry, go ahead, Dan.
Messi is like what, 28, turning 29 next year, and Ronaldo's into his 30s now. And yeah. They never get hurt.
And they go deep into every tournament, right? They play like 50, 60 games a year.
They play more than 60 games every single season. It's beyond ridiculous that neither of them ever seem to get hurt.
Makes you scratch your head and wonder why.
It's, yeah, right?
It's odd, right?
Hey, nobody ever mentions how big Ronaldo got after he joined Real Madrid.
Those legs are like thunderbolts.
The same thing happened to Gareth Bale. They just seem to grow into twice the man they once were in the English Premier League.
Not saying anything.
I'm not saying anything. But
just putting it out there.
Andres Cordero joins us now. And Dre, we're just kind of mentioning here on the show, like, yeah, Messi's out for the next couple of months with this knee injury. But, I mean, given everything that's happened with Messi and Ronaldo, it's kind of amazing how little both of those players get injured.
Yeah, unquestionably. I mean, they're not just insanely talented. They're also incredibly fit. Messi probably hasn't had anything like this since maybe 2013, and even that I don't think was quite as long. If you remember, he kind of hobbled around that by Bayern Munich 7-0 in the Champions League. But outside of that, he's been relatively healthy since really early on in his career. Hi, by the way. We got right into like the business of, of injuries and negativity, but how's it going?
It's going good, Dre.
No,
it's going good.
No formalities, all business right away.
When Villarreal is winning La Liga, things have to be going good.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's such a small town, Villarreal. It's a really good story there. 50,000 people, and it's a club that's been obviously in the top flight for many, many years. And for the first time in their history, they're top of the table in La Liga, which is really astonishing to think that. You think of Manuel Pellegrini's Villarreal with, you know, Riquelme and some excellent players.
Marco Senna.
Fiorentina now, for example, like Amati Fernandez, Borja Valero. Those guys were all at Villarreal at some time playing fantastic football and never top of the table. So they're a really good story. And then the other really good small team story, if we're going to hipster out, is Eibar, once again, the top-ranked Basque club early on in La Liga, as they were through much of the first half last season, but they tailed off in the second half.
Here, quick question, because I was saying this earlier. How fast did the news of Messi's injury go out? Like, how did they know right away, 7 to 8 weeks? It seemed like an hour went by, and boom, we know exactly what's going on. Like, does he have cameras and just media following him right to the hospital?
Yeah, we knew right away. I mean, during the game, I was on the broadcast of that game, and we knew that he had been taken immediately to a clinic to be examined. We knew when he got out. It was really, I mean, honestly, Messi or Ronaldo being injured is such major news that it gets covered in the way that no other injury does. Even, you know, big star players. Paul Pogba gets injured, it's not going to get the coverage that Lionel Messi will get. And so we had almost, you know, live up to the minute while the game was going on, finding out exactly what was wrong with Messi. And to be honest, you know, 2 months, it could have been significantly worse when you talk about knee injuries.
Dre Cordero, our guest here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is European Football Weekly. So what happens in the next 2 months for Barcelona without Lionel Messi? Is it just Neymar and Suarez take on the bigger roles?
Well, I mean, they've got an exceptional squad. I think you take Messi out and they're still one of the top five, four, maybe even three teams on the planet. I mean, Messi's really just, he becomes the system. But you realize when he's not there that name by name, they're still going to be better than just about every single opponent they face. In fact, that'll be true of every opponent they face if you're just going by what the lineup would be on paper until maybe that Clásico, November 21st, I think it is, and there's a real good chance that he may be able to make it in time for that. But outside of that, Barcelona will still be favored in every game that they play between now and Messi's return. That includes a trip to the Sanchez Pizjuan, which is really difficult coming up in La Liga, games against Bayer Leverkusen in the Champions League. But they should be fine. The question is not about whether they have enough talent. Certainly they have enough talent. They don't have enough depth. That's for certain. But also whether they have the mentality and how much of a knock, you know, losing a player like Lionel Messi on the pitch is, because it affects the opposing team in terms of how they approach the game, and it affects Barcelona in terms of how they approach the game. The one thing I've been seeing, though, watching Neymar over the last couple of seasons, Neymar looks like he could lead just about any club on the planet, and now he's going to get a chance.
Now, that leads right into my question about who's the focal point going to go to. My gut instinct says Suarez, because we've seen what he does before. He's a goal scorer and a provider. He's done it in different systems. My guess is Suarez. Now you're saying Messi. Am I off?
He's saying Neymar.
Oh, sorry. Messi's on the brain. My bad. But you're saying Neymar, but I'm saying Suarez. Am I off on this? Because he did score two goals in that game to win the game.
Those guys are pretty decent players, all right?
Yeah. We're picking at straws.
But one has to take the lead.
Yeah, of course. And you know what? I think in terms of the media attention and the general perception, and obviously it's going to depend on who scores the goals, because that's what we sort of focus on superficially. But I think the media attention is going to be mostly focused on Neymar. But yeah, the real impact, in terms of not just the goals and assists, the play could be the play of Luis Suarez. There's a lot of the hard work, the off the ball stuff, similar to Carlos Tevez in terms of trying to win the ball back for Barcelona. And so he may be slightly more important. So I agree with you in that extent. But I think in terms of focal point, in terms of who the spotlight will be on, I think it'll be Neymar, because he does seem to be that sort of heir apparent. For once we're living in a post-Cristiano Messi world, Neymar could be, you know, a future Ballon d'Or winner.
What a sad, sad world that's going to be.
it really is.
We don't want to look forward to that, for sure. What's going on with all the Barcelona players and tax fraud? You know, I know what happened to Messi. Now it's going to... Now Javier Mascherano, I mean... At some point, they're going to lose everybody going to jail.
Yeah, you're 100% right, and it's utterly ridiculous. And Spain has taken a much stronger stance in recent years against millionaires who have been, you know, not paying their fair share of taxes. And a few footballers outside of Barcelona, believe it or not, have been implicated as well. And somehow those stories don't stick. I remember Xavi Alonso had an issue his last year at Real Madrid, and it was a 1 week. I think Sergio Ramos was investigated, or I think maybe that got cleared up. But it gets a one mention, and it's gone. And with the Barcelona stuff, it has seemed to stick around. And now Neymar going through the same issue in Brazil, where I think they're asking for like $50 million or something like that in terms of taxes related to his transfer from Santos to Barcelona. So it's kind of you need a financial degree to understand what's going on at Barca off the pitch, which to some extent, when you think of all of the things that have surrounded this club over the last couple of seasons, going back to, for example, the death of Tito Villanova, which was a tragic event, the resignation with their president, scandal involving their vice president, and scandal involving their star players, the amount of winning they've been able to do, and the extent to which they seem to be completely immune to all of that stuff off the pitch, is really astonishing.
Speaking of criminals and fraud... it's perfect segue into speaking of criminals and fraud, it's perfect segue into Sepp Blatter and the stuff that's going on with the FIFA president. What's your take on this?
Honestly, it used to be just a shrug of the shoulders when we heard this stuff, because we felt like nothing would happen. But there's a real sense that, you know, once the U.S. government got involved, investigative agencies in the U.S. Started collaborating with Swiss authorities, or rather the other way around, I think there's a sense now that we actually may be seeing some kind of change. And I almost don't want to jinx it, because we've been through this kind of thing before, maybe never to this extent, but you always have the feeling that they were completely immune, that guys like Blatter and Platini were just untouchable, or that if you did remove them, the system is so unbelievably corrupt, so systematically corrupt, that it wouldn't have made much of a difference anyway. But now there's some real questions about whether or not we're going to see some reform in FIFA. It's still a hell of a lot harder than just putting a couple of people in prison or having the deterrent of, you know, not letting the top guys know that, hey, you will pay the price for your actions. I think when you consider how many federations there are and how easily corruptible some of the smaller ones are because of what a couple of million means to their yearly budget versus, for example, Germany or Italy, and that, you know, these smaller confederations in the Caribbean and Asia have the same kind of power to some real corruption. But at least now we're not just shrugging it off, which is kind of a nice feeling.
Dre Cordero, commentator for BN Sports, joining us here on European Football Weekly. Yeah, like that whole thing is just, it's a mess. And now we're supposed to respect that Michel Platini avoided getting paid from FIFA for 9 years or 11 years.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to believe that backstory? I mean, come on. Like, we're not idiots. Please.
But it seems all too real. Like Andre said, it seems all too real now with the United States coming in, the FBI and all this. You can't shake the feds, that's for sure.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Let's take it back on the pitch because that's more fun to talk about. You were calling the obliteration at the Giuseppe Meazza yesterday, Fiorentina 4-1 over Inter, and now Fiorentina tied atop the table in Serie A with Inter Milan. That was some performance from the Ichis, Ilicic and Kalinic.
Yeah, the northern, or rather the Eastern Europeans really doing very well in Serie A, and really on both sides. But who would have known? There were like three or four Croatians on the pitch. I think three, actually, Croatians on the field. And Nikola Kalinic might be the least known of them in terms of, you know, experience in Serie A, because he's coming over from Dnipro, where he didn't score a ton of goals last season. He actually started the season scoring well for Dnipro this year. But he was unreal how good and how much of an impact. I mean, yeah, he had such a massive impact. I mean, he draws the penalty right away 3 minutes in. He goes on to score a hat trick. He gets to Almiranda sent off with a straight red card. I mean, his impact was, on an individual level, I mean, maybe only Robert Lewandowski has had as major an impact in as many different situations inside of a game so far this season across the top leagues. But it wasn't just about one player. I mean, this was a really good team performance from Paulo Sousa's man, who in a very short amount of time has been playing not just attractive football. They were playing very attractive football under Vincenzo Montella, but now playing very attractive and very effective, dangerous football where they're creating a ton of chances. And Inter have been very good this season, haven't conceded a ton of goals. Yeah, they had 1-0 their way through, you know, for the first five wins of the season, but that was a very good side that Fiorentina absolutely dismantled.
What's going to tie in the two, La Liga with Serie A here? Because a big question. I look at the table and it's just shocking to see. What's more of a surprise story, Celta Vigo or Torino right now?
I think Torino might be a bigger surprise, because I've seen Celta do this over the last couple of seasons, and they were actually quite poor for half the campaign last year, and the second half looked like one of the best teams in La Liga. They've been excellent since back when Luis Enrique was with them a couple seasons back. But, you know, they've picked up where they left off. They're playing arguably, honestly, this is not hyperbole, they're playing arguably the best football in Europe, save for maybe, you know, Bayern Munich. And maybe just Bayern Munich, honestly, because on a game-to-game basis, Celta look very, very good against the likes of Sevilla, Barcelona. So that's a team, and especially in Balaidos, where I think anybody is going to struggle. The question is, you know, obviously, can they keep it up for the entirety of the season? But right now, they're playing out of their minds. Torino, a little bit better of a surprise. I mean, they haven't been this good since the departures of Ciro Immobile and Alessio Cerci, and neither of those guys have been able to replicate their success away from Turin ever since. And so to see them play as well as they have, obviously they benefited from an own goal this week, that, you know, a bit of a break here or there, but you need those from time to time. They're playing really well, and I think maybe they're the bigger surprise in Celta.
And that goal from Marco Benassi, like, wow. Oh my God, unbelievable. If you haven't yet seen it, please. Do yourself a favor and find it.
One of my favorite parts of that goal, actually, is Fabio Quagliarella, who doesn't seem to score any normal goals. He only scores ridiculous goals. And his reaction to Marco Benassi is just absolutely priceless.
So which one, in your opinion, is better, Van Basten or Benassi right now?
You always got to go with the classic. It's never going to be a fair argument.
No, true.
No, it's not. Dre Cordero joining us here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Always a pleasure, Dre. And we'll be listening for you on BeIN Sports. Keep getting Ray Hudson under you know, keep him in check.
Yeah, we try to. I need change instead of the booth when I'm commentary games with Ray. And you know what? The great thing about Ray, though, is all of that passion is 100% legit. I mean, you can be talking to him off air, and it's exactly the same way. So it's really an absolute pleasure to work with him.
It definitely comes off genuine, for sure.
Thanks so much, Dre.
Cheers, guys.
All right, there he is, Dre Cordero. And the best thing about following Ray Hudson on Twitter is that he is all over the place.
Yeah, it's not just like it's not just soccer.
But it's not just soccer. He is like going crazy about like the Detroit Red Wings or the Detroit Tigers, or, you know, he's watching baseball, he's watching football, he's watching like
he's very Detroit centric.
On Saturday, I saw him like going crazy about the TCU and Texas Tech NCAA football game.
He casts a wide net.
Yeah, he's all over the place. He must have like a zillion TVs in his house.
Now, aside from, let's put Ray Hudson on the back burner right now. Dre was saying that it's a good thing for Serie A for Juventus to be struggling. Now, I know that's horrible for you, and I'm a hater by association with you,
yep,
just to give you a little stick. Now, do you think it's a good thing for the league as a whole that Juve is where they're at right now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a good way of looking at it.
Not convincing.
Serie A was at its best when Juve, Milan, and Inter were dominating. Like, since Calciopoli and Juve went down, and you can say what you want. Inter won the Champions League in 2010 there.
But the league suffered?
But since then, the league has suffered massively. You need, and it goes the same in every league, you need your big boys to be the big boys.
Always.
Because they...
No parity?
Whether the little teams like to believe it or not,
they have no chance.
The reason they're making money is because of those big teams. Like, does anybody want to watch,
Bologna Carpi?
No, they don't. And does anybody want to, like, it's harsh to say it that way, but that's the way it is. And it's the same way in the EPL. Like, people want to see Manchester United at the top of the table. They want to see Chelsea, Manchester City. They want to see those teams do battle, and it's always the lead story when those two teams do battle on a Premier League weekend. Nobody's really necessarily caring to watch, I don't know,
Norwich,
Southampton, Swansea this weekend.
But here's the thing, though. It's completely different in the EPL because the TV contract's so massive that the clubs are so rich that, truthfully, I truly believe that people will turn out to watch Norwich Bournemouth over, let's say, Bologna Carpi.
Yeah, and now that you mentioned Carpi, they've actually just fired their manager after a 5-1 loss to Roma, at Roma. Like, what more did you expect? You're Carpi. Please.
And you're not directly
you're
not directly at the foot of the table. Second last, not that bad.
All right, let's do creme de la creme. For me, it's the man who finally got off the schneid. And there was a couple of guys who got off the schneid this week. But it's Alexis Sanchez, who broke out in a big way with a hat trick against Claudio Ranieri and Leicester.
I did the live blog for that game on sportsnet.ca, and he was unreal throughout the entire match.
Yeah, doing the fantasy blog for sportsnet.ca a couple of weeks ago, I kind of mentioned, like, he's like just a volcano waiting to erupt. All the numbers are there. Like, he's still getting his shots on goal, still creating all
just
these chances.
Not going in, not getting those bounces.
It's just not going in yet. And sure enough, he broke out in a big way.
I had difficulty picking mine. I was going to go with...
You can go with Alexis Sanchez.
No,
he did score a hat.
No. I was going to go with Jamie Vardy because he had two goals and he's leading the Premier League in goals, tied with Riyad Mahrez. But considering they lost 5-2, I'm going to go with Daniel Sturridge, Liverpool, breaking his duck, getting the 3 points, giving Brendan Rodgers one more week on the job.
At least one more week.
The bookies have Klopp at 5-4 slash. Heavy money's being spent.
All right, that's it for us. Stick a fork in us. We're done.
Stick a fork in you.
Champions League is coming up this week. We'll be back next week, Monday night. As always, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, for Thomas Michalakos, producer Emil Delic, I'm Dan Riccio. This has been European Football Weekly.